Welcome to the Child Welfare Leaders Podcast, where we challenge the status quo and inspire you to lead change right where you are. I'm your host, Cherish Fields. If this is your first time listening, I'm glad that you found this podcast. I know you will enjoy the conversations we have, so feel free to catch up on the previous episodes and tune in every last Sunday of the month to hear brand new episodes. If you like what you hear, share with a fellow child welfare leader or others interested in the field. For those returning listeners, thank you for your continued support of this podcast. Don't forget, it helps when you leave a review and take a moment to share on your social media. Surviving child welfare work is oftentimes barely what we are doing. Maybe something that we know all too well. I'm sure this is not a shocker to you, but if this is, let me be the one to inform you. There is an estimated national average child welfare turnover rate of approximately 30%, with individual agency rates as high as 65% and as low as 6%. There are even higher average rates of turnover noted among child welfare trainees. That ranges from 46 to 54%, according to reports from Child Casey Family Programs. With child welfare seemingly not being able to sustain stability within its workforce, we need some solutions to help improve the support provided to child welfare workers. Research from Casey states that stress, emotional exhaustion, and job satisfaction had the most impact on worker turnover predictions. We know this is an ongoing problem, one that needs us to speak up for ourselves and facilitate solutions within our community of child welfare. Today, this is just what my guest did. We are talking to a child welfare worker who is going against the status quo to offer a solution and encouraging workers by sharing with us gems from a book she wrote that will help child welfare workers survive in the field. I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. Hey, so my guest today is author and child welfare worker all the way out from Cali, Michaela Conte. How are you, girl?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad you're joining me on the podcast to talk about your new book and share your expertise with us.
Yes, I'm so excited too. And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I can't wait to share about your book and what you, your process. So I have to ask, what started you on your child welfare journey?
So what started me on my child welfare journey is that, so during my MSW program, I was also a Title IV-E, meaning that you get accepted to the program, and then upon graduation, you have 2 years to work in the county. So I did that, and then also my second year internship was with in the county. So after I graduated, I still continued working in child welfare. I really loved it so much, and I stayed, and I have not left at all. I did my two years, and I've been there now in child welfare now for 6 years, and I really love it. So that's why I stayed, and that's my journey.
Awesome. So what inspired you to do a book?
So what inspired me to do a book is the inspiration and the idea came from when I went to, when I transitioned to another county. So my first county was, I stayed there for about 5 years. And then recently, like in September, I moved to another county. And whilst in the training, I noticed that a lot of the social workers in the training had no idea what was going on, what was being said. They didn't know like the different areas of child welfare that you can work in the county. And they looked so lost. And I was like, I'm thinking, what is the problem here? What is the issue? Because, you know, us social workers, we have to have a mindset of, what is the problem? What is the issue? How can I help or how can I fix it? Yes. So I was like, something is lost, because also most of the social workers that are coming in the county, most of them are not Title IV-E. So they did not get that same experience as the ones that are tied to 4E. Some comes from like mental health, some comes from like a small organization, so a non-profit. So I was like, I need to do something. So the idea of writing a book came up. And I didn't have the title yet. It's just about, why don't you just write a book? And it was actually going to be e-book, not like a print one. Do an e-book talking about the different child welfare jobs, how to stay organized, because that was one of the main things. They're like, I don't know how I'm going to stay organized in this job. There's so much to do. So I started working. Well, first I got a coach because, I don't know, I had no idea about how to write a book, how to start. So I got a coach to help me and also to hold me accountable of what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, and all that stuff. So I got my coach, and the first meeting, I told my coach that I want to finish this book in November, which is around my birthday. So I was like, no, November 15 will be my release date. I got the coach back in, I want to say March or April. So whilst I was writing the book, she's like, I think you're gonna finish this book way before that time, So I was like, oh, I don't think so, that's self-doubt. So I wrote the book and I kept on going, and she's like, you're doing really good. You should really be able to done. And of course, I was still self-doubting myself. I don't think I can do it. It's hard. Like, there was a chapter that was very hard for me to do. It took me like 2 weeks to write it. Well, the other ones I was done like in a week. So I finished the book, and my idea, the topic came from one day when I was driving. I was like, what am I gonna title this book? I know it's gonna be something child welfare, but what am I gonna say? And we are always talking in this field. We are surviving. We're surviving. How are you doing? I'm surviving, So that's where the survival came. I was like, oh, I'm gonna call it How to Survive as a Child Welfare Social Worker. I came home, I think I wrote it down on my phone. And then I came home, I wrote it down on my journal. So that's the process of it. And I just kept on writing, kept on having ideas. I reached out to some of my social worker friends, because it's not all the different departments that I have worked in too. So I reached out for them to help me out and all that stuff. So that's where my idea came from. It really to help the new social workers that are coming into the field, and also for the ones that are thinking about becoming a child welfare social worker that are going through the MSW program or even the BSW. So
Yeah,
that's
that makes sense. That's a good resource because then people can kind of get some insight and be educated from a person who's actually doing it, right? So that's even more valuable. So I love that. What, tell us a little bit about how you found time to, write a book. You got a family, you got to put in that self-care because we preach about that, right? That's important. So, and then with all that the position requires as a child welfare worker, how did you fit in time for a book? And you say you would get chapters done in a week, girl.
Yes, I was getting chapters done in a week because I met with my coach every other week. So before I met with her, I had to have something done or something sent to her for her to look at it. But I literally will stay up at night. So like when the girls go down to bed, I will stay up and write my book. I normally will stay up to like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning to write something down. And another thing, it's really funny. I got most of my ideas of what I'm gonna write in the shower when I'm in the shower. I know it sounds funny, but that's, I'm gonna be real. That's
Hey, you gotta be. That's what this is about. You gotta be
yeah,
real.
I had to
Yes.
be real. The shower was my favorite place in the morning. The shower was when I got my ideas.
That's the idea incubator right there. Okay.
It is. The shower is when you think about everything. So when I go in the shower, and which is sometimes long because I'm running late for work, I'm like, oh, I need to get out of this shower. So I get in the shower, have my ideas. I had a book. So this book, I carried it with me everywhere when I was going to work. When I came home, I took it out of my backpack and I had it at the side of my bed. So as soon as I get out of the shower, I come and write what I thought about. And I will literally number it in my head. So that way I know that, okay, you were thinking about 5 thoughts. You need to write 5 thoughts down. So that's mm-hmm. exactly how I wrote my book. And another way was driving too. Driving is another time when I'm by myself. Because literally you cannot think about stuff like that when you're playing with the kids or you're mm-hmm. doing something. So I got my ideas. I was like, okay, let me come. Okay, I'm in the shower, write my ideas, and I'm driving. Of course, I cannot drive and write, but I'll definitely do my numbers too. And then when I'm done driving, I take out my book and I write down what I think about. So that's really what helped me to get through the book so fast, because I was always jotting down my ideas. I didn't wait until it was time to type what I had to type in and do it from there. And I'm also a person that likes to write. I have so many books everywhere. I'm always writing my grocery list. I write them down. I don't do it on my phone. So I'm always writing. And then another way that I found time was like I said, I got a coach, which also helped me in the nighttime and my self-care. It's like I don't really think, when people ask me like, how did you find time, I'm like, I don't think it affected my time, because even my auntie in London, she's also a social worker and she does the same thing I do. She was so surprised. She's like, Michaela, how did you find time to write a book and you have children at home? Like, I can't even do anything like that. I come home and I just want to sleep. But but in life, if you want to do something, you make time. We yeah. all have time. You just have to utilize it. You know, you don't have to go to bed at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. You can make time. We just have to utilize our time. If we have to make time to go to work, we can make time for other personal things and for our goals. And that's what I'm learning, that it just does not have to be about my 9 to 5. I can start doing other things on the side to help whilst I'm also doing social work stuff, you know? So that's why I was like, okay, where is my time? What can I do? And I just started thinking and planning, and that's how I was able to write the book, just planning and making time for it. Like, there were some days I stayed up like 2 o'clock in the morning. It wasn't every single day, but some days I sat 2 o'clock in the morning. And even sometimes I'll go outside whilst the girls are playing and I'll just have my laptop or my book writing down some stuff, because now they play by themselves. They don't really need me to be there with them. They're okay. So independent. So I just do that, and that's how I was able to write it.
Well, that's awesome. And I think that's good, because that's something that we're good at as social workers too, right?
We plan
and we organize. Mm-hmm. That's a part of the job. You mm-hmm. have to get skilled at doing that. So that's mm-hmm. awesome that you utilize your social work skills.
Yeah.
You make this book happen so that people can benefit from it. So thinking back to when you first started as a worker, right? Because this is How to Survive as a Child Welfare Worker. So when you first started 6 years ago, what do you feel like the biggest challenges were for you in the position?
Ooh, the biggest challenges were not advocating for myself. And another challenge was interacting with the families, trying to find out what exactly they need. Because all of them come in with different needs. Although the main thing that they come with is concerns of abuse and neglect. But after talking to them, there's more to that. So they all have different needs. So trying to figure out, it was hard for me not to like put clients in one box. Because when you go through the trainings, when you go through the stuff, you basically learn the same things, right? They don't teach you, this client has this, this is what you need to do. When this client have that, this is what you need to do. Everybody goes through the same safety practice organization training. Everybody goes through the same coach training and all the ones. They are the same. So trying to really find out the specific needs of the client and finding resources to meet their needs, that was very challenging. And it's an ongoing child challenge too. But I feel like now I have more understanding of it and ways to approach it and not just that one cookie cutter way. So that is one. Another one was the advocating for myself. You know, when we start a new job, you want to be careful of what you say, how you do things, because you want people to look at you. So that was a challenge, because I'm like, I'm in a position where I'm in the county. If I say something, it may affect me. But it's like, you are always hearing them say, advocate for your clients, advocate for your clients. So I literally had to tell myself that the same way I am going to advocate for my clients, that's the same way I need to advocate for myself too. If somebody tells me to do something and I don't feel comfortable doing it and it doesn't feel right, I need to let them know. Because number one, they are not the one working with the clients on a day-to-day basis. You are. So you know exactly what they need or what they want. So I had to advocate for myself, saying, yeah, I heard you, but this is ABCD, you know. And also personally too, you have to advocate for yourself personally. If you don't feel good that day, you need to let people know, you know, I'm going to take some time off, you know, that self-care. Because when you start this job, I didn't know, like, oh, you could use your sick time and anytime. I thought it was only when you're sick or not feeling good, like, you know.
But yeah.
Also mental health. I had to learn about taking mental health day. That was another challenging thing, because we just keep going and going and going until we have our requested vacation time. But you know, you have mental health day. You need to use it. So, yeah.
That's good. Now, do you feel like with the things that you had a challenge with that you had to support, so when you had to advocate for yourself, did you find it to be easy to do so? Did you have leadership that understood, or did you feel like you really had to take it up a notch in your advocacy for yourself so people kind of really heard you and knew that you were still dedicated to the work, but you also, you know, found yourself to be valuable enough to say, hey, this is what I need?
Luckily for me, my supervisor I had, when I will do that, they will support me. So that was one thing. She was very supportive. I mean, there were times I had to go higher up. But other things, she was supportive of me. But some things I had to go high up, because I'm like, you are not hearing me. I'm not being heard. So let's take it to the next level, you know. But some stuff, she was very supportive, especially taking that mental health day. She was very supportive of it.
Yeah, I think that's good. So you give some gems on how to even do some of that to make it easier for others, mm-hmm, right? Because they gotta know, like, this is key in this work. The families go through a lot. The kids go through a lot. And sometimes just listening to their stories can mentally exhaust you, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Now, what do you think that people are going to get from your book? I think more, but let me reframe the question. What do you want people to get from your book when they read it?
So what I want for people to get from my book is just learning about child welfare. Like, just having a picture in your mind about it, because also, this job has a lot of negative effects. There's a lot of negativity that have been said. So for my book, I wanted to bring a light to it, to child welfare. That, you know, you just don't have to be in one position. When you get into child welfare, it's just not one thing you can do. There's so many other things that you can do. It's just not like, you don't have to be at a position for like 5 years before you move on. You can always put in a transfer to another position if one is not working for you. And another thing is, I want them to take away is the pros and cons. In most of the chapters, I wrote down pros and cons. The pros of working as a family reunification social worker, and the cons. So that way the readers can have an idea of how it's going to best fit their personality and what they actually want to do. And then another thing that I want them to take away is the survival tips that I have provided in the book. I think that's very major because it's not much that is talked about. This is self-care, self-care, self-care. But we just hear self-care. Okay, go on walks, make sure you have your lunch and things like that. But it's, I think the tips that I have provided are tips that I have actually used, like self-care on the job whilst you're working the 9 to 5. What self-care are you utilizing at that time? Like, are you stopping and taking your breaks? Are you going for walks? For me, my self-care when I'm doing this, it when I'm doing the work is, especially when I'm working on court reports, I have my Bluetooth on and I'm listening to podcasts, like your podcast. I'm always listening to it at
Woo
work. That's when I
woo.
get time to listen to it really detail. And then I'm looking like my YouTube videos. I'm listening to like I'm watching IG Live. I think the other day my supervisor came by my desk and I had on an IG Live and I saw her watching my phone. And then I'm like, oh, I'm just watching, some IG Live. She's like, go ahead and do your thing, So that kind of supports health because you need distraction from the work you are doing. And that's one thing that I want you social workers to know, and the ones that are going to read this book, that it's not because you're in the field that doesn't mean you have to be so strict on yourself. Just relax, just take it. I always have fun at my job because me and my co-workers were always joking around, just having fun. So just make it your own way. Like, some people think that they just have to go to work, concentrate on the work, and that's it. But I think this book will bring some enlightenment to the job and the field that we're doing. It's a very rewarding field, and that's also what I want people to see, that child welfare is a very rewarding job, and there's so many different aspects of it. There's so many different ways that you can help. So I just hope that it can bring some enlightenment to them. I hope that after reading it, they can have an idea of where they will fit best into this work. And I just hope that they utilize the tips that I have provided in this book.
I love it. And based off what I've read, I've really enjoyed it. And I do think it'd be very beneficial for someone who's starting off in the field. I do think that this is a resource that a lot of people need because sometimes, when you apply to the state, I know in many cases they'll have you watch these videos to kind of see the kind of work that you'll be doing and just kind of prepare the person. But there hasn't really been a book that you can read to say, what does a child welfare worker look like? What kind of job? Is that what would I be doing? What do I need? What type of skills do I have? And I think that this paints that picture. And I think that is very useful to just on the education part so that people can kind of have the understanding. But also if you're in it and you need to recalibrate and say, oh man, you know what, here's some good tips here, I think that'll be useful as well.
Yeah,
So
that's true.
in case
Because
you got to give us some gems from the book. You're on a podcast and we're talking about this book, but I want you to drop some gems to help the child welfare workers out there who are in the direct practice and tell them maybe just a couple tips, a little sneak peek of some things that you offer.
a little snippet I offer is I provided a chart at the end of the book, and this chart literally has bulletin points about what you're gonna be doing, like working with families, working with foster parents, doing assessments, doing case notes, advocating for yourself and clients. So it definitely has some pointers about what you're gonna be doing. And then another gem is the on the in chapter 5, the 10 tips to survive as a child welfare social worker. One of the tips that I like is practice self-care that works for you while you're at work. Because self-care can go in different ways. What works for me might not work for you. So you figure out what is going to work for you. Another tip I gave is to develop an organizational system. It's very crucial in this job to be organized because it's really hard to focus and to prioritize yourself if you're all over the place. So just be organized will really help you to not being so overwhelmed. Another tip I gave is to keep a close track of your deadlines, like your call report, your home visits, your referrals, your assessments, because those are very important to in the work that we do, because you don't want somebody to, you know, your supervisor to be always reminding you. For me, one thing I have is I have a chart of when things are due. So I have an idea of when to turn them in. And then another tip is to utilize supervision time and to always check in with your supervisor on a regular basis. And then another gem is I just literally wrote down all the jobs that are available within the child welfare. I know it's going to, from county to county and from state to state, it's going to be different. But from my own perspective, all the ones that are available, at least the two counties that I have worked in, I have provided them, and I give pros and cons of working within these different jobs. So that's the gem in my book.
I love it. I love it. And I find that so that people got to go read it so they can see the details of what you offer. Because, yeah, I see that chart and definitely those tips. I mean, they are useful. You got to see what she says.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell us a little bit about what's the most difficult thing in child welfare, do you think, from your perspective? What's hard about this job? What's difficult about working in this field?
I will say what's difficult. Oh my gosh, how much time do I have? I'm just So I would say that the most difficult things about this job is that I always complain, because me too, I work. I'm like, that's how I vent. I'm always like talking loud and venting stuff out.
Yeah.
It's the amount of stuff, the amount of things that we have to do. Well, also it depends on the department that you're in. So the department that I work in right now is I work as a dependency investigation social worker. I don't know if that's the same for your state, if they call them dependency investigation social workers. So I'm the worker that after the emergency response social worker has gone out, I'm the one that takes over the case. I think they call court workers too at some counties. Okay. Yeah, so I'm that worker. And it's a lot that you have to do, because you have to be the one to contact the family to let them know that there's a court. You have to get them ready for the first court and all that stuff. So I think that sometimes the work can be overwhelming. That's a difficult challenge. But also to help you out, it's also about staying organized. That can help. Another challenge is not having enough resources to provide for these families, because sometimes, you know, for example, right now we are facing a challenge where a lot of the service providers to provide therapy for children and adults, majority of them are full. So now you have kids on the wait list since March. They're on a wait list.
Wow.
You have adults. Yeah, because I think when COVID happened, a lot of people are seeking therapy right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a big challenge there right now. There are no service providers for therapy. It's all on a wait list. So that's a biggest challenge, because some of these kids, they need therapy right away. So it's been a challenge. And then, oh my gosh, I thought about another challenge there. I can't think of right now. He was the
Well, I think that's a good one. So what do you do when you don't have the available services? Because these families are in crisis, right? So it's like, you know, I mean, other families and other people are in crisis too to go seek therapy, which is why they're full. But it's almost like, what do you do when you're faced with this and you have this family that are basically being, their services are being delayed because everything is filled up? So how do you maneuver from that, right? So in the system, what are the options when you work in the system? And I think that that's something that, so for me, you saying that, to me, the system could do better by helping us as workers. When you know you've brought a kid under the jurisdiction of the courts, then you need to already be preparing to have and build partnerships to make more capacity in the services that are offered, right? Or have the opportunity to build partnerships with various counties. So if a family has to go out of the county, that they can do that in order to get the services, you know, but just there should be more options when it gets like that. Cause it's not like that all the time, but when it gets like that, there needs to be a response versus we get to this place where, wait, everybody's filled up. So this family is not getting what they need. And we know for a child, that's very difficult if they're not getting their services because their symptoms can worsen if they're not getting support or help, right? Yeah. Their family, that keeps that kid, when you delay services, that keeps that kid from being able to be unified with that family because mom, dad, or whomever has, you know, custody doesn't have the services they need to be able to report to the courts that the family is progressing. So I think those are some of my thoughts. What do you think that the system could do when we face situations where services are at capacity? How do we build more capacity in the system to benefit the families and the youth that, you know, us as child welfare workers, how we serve?
Well, definitely what you said is trying to get contracts for different agencies. You know, instead of just staying with the one or the two or the three agencies that the county or the state have been working with. So now, since that there's a challenge, trying to find out what other agencies are out there that are providing the same services that we need and try to get contracted with them. So I think that's where it can start. Because sometimes it's like there are services out there, but we just don't know about it unless it gets brought up to us. Like recently, it was just brought up to us that the college is providing therapy services. But right now, since we're in summer break, they are closed. So that's another way. So maybe the county can do something where they can have them on their list, you know? So if that's something that we need, we can always refer them to them instead of having to just go through the ones that we know. So being contracted and reaching out to these agencies to see what they have. And also not just in one county, see what other counties are doing, what other counties have, and see how we can all branch together and work together. Because sometimes the families, even in that county, their cases necessarily with our county, but the kids are in different counties. That's so trying to find out, okay, how can they receive services in that county too? And also maybe the parents can receive that service in that county too. So it's definitely about branching out, about reaching out and trying to solve this issue, because it's just going to keep going and going and going, and it's going to get worse and worse. So right now that we are here, work within the agencies to see what can be done. I think that's a start.
Yeah. And I hope at some point we can advocate, you know, somehow, some way with child welfare, you know, leaders and those that can make decisions with utilizing the money so that anything that's available in the state should be able to be utilized by any person being served under the child welfare system. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many rules that are different from county to county.
Yeah.
I think what you bring up is something I faced consistently, was that you go across to another county, even though we're allowed to place statewide a child.
Yeah.
But what happens is, when it's time to put services, you know, in place, you face so many barriers because that's not the original county that they're in, and then you need all these permissions, and then it takes time, and then you're backlogged another couple weeks, and then oops, the worker, you know, maybe the person who would get them in for the intake, they changed, and so now you got to re-refer, and you know, so a lot of stuff you're kind of doing again and again, you know, it's repetitive. And so I think, one, you got to have a lot of patience. You know, gotta have a lot of grace and a lot of patience.
I think
what's key is the collaboration part. And I think that the system can do that better. I think that we, as social work, you know, those that work in child welfare, who are foster care workers, adoption workers, wherever you work in the child welfare system, I think we could be definitely more collaborative with each other, more gracious to each other.
Yeah,
to make the experience, you know, better, right?
Yeah.
We're all facing, we already, you know, we have all this paperwork to complete. We're, you know, exhausted trying to navigate the system ourselves, right? So I think that your book, I think, will be a good gateway to some of that, because people kind of will know what to expect.
Yeah.
And then have some tools at their disposal to help them along the way, versus, I know sometimes if I'm doing something, I don't have instruction that I understand, then I get frustrated, and whoever is in my pathway might feel it. That frustration, and that's not, you know, your intent, but sometimes when you are frustrated with trying to navigate the system, and, you know, kind of hitting your head against a wall and constantly finding a barrier, you know, or a mountain that you got to try to move, you know, for a family, it gets exhausting, you know, and it does wear on you emotionally and in your mood and things of that nature. So I definitely think that resources like this will help with that, because I know what to expect. I have some tools, you know, available to me that will, you know, help remind me what I can do in those moments, you know? So I think that that's awesome. And I'm really happy that you wrote a book, and there's a book now to really, really give the nitty gritty on the job.
And another challenge that I wanted to mention is placement. For our youth, that's another whole topic. It is a big, it is the biggest challenge, and I don't think it's just one. I think it's worldwide. For youth, especially the youth, it's a biggest challenge, because everybody wants the babies. Home wants the babies. Oh, I can take the babies. But the youth, and also now with the new law about STRTP, I don't know if that you guys also have that. So where there's no more group homes, it's STRTP. Some group homes closed because they couldn't meet the requirements of the STRTP homes. So that's just, it's just, oh my gosh, I cannot even start on the placements for youth.
And you know, I have an episode that talks about, you know, residentials. And I do think that residentials are needed. I think they are a necessary treatment option for youth.
Yeah.
Be it that I worked in a residential for a time, I think it just has to be done correctly. It has to be done right.
Yes.
And so I definitely think that it's not, and then let's just be real, like you said, with placement, this could be a whole episode in itself, but the truth is in placement, you have to have options for kids. You can't close. I think one of the things I have a hard time with it, and again, this will probably be a whole episode. Maybe I'll talk about this. I'm going to have to bring this conversation up.
Yes.
We have a whole panel, right?
We have to do something.
Like, this, I think what happened is, when that federal legislation came down, I don't know who is advising our presidents and the people, legislators. I don't know who's advising these people, but I don't think it's people who are in the nitty gritty of child welfare.
Of course, because it's they have no idea about child welfare. They have no work in our
family. Girl.
And
I feel like if it was, then somebody needed to tell them, you can't bring this sweeping legislation out and have the potential of group homes and residential shuttering, And then we have nowhere to replace those available beds in order to place kids.
Yeah.
Right? Now, granted, we should not, kids should not have to be in shelters. They really shouldn't. They should, no, should be, you know, in a residential if they don't need it. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that we don't have other options. And when you don't have those other options, then you're really limiting your workers and being able to find a placement for these kids. And you're going to have more workers. I'm waiting. I'm telling you, I'm waiting to hear probably across all states, news reports coming out on how DHS workers, DSS workers, social workers are spending the night, or case managers spending the night at the offices because they don't have anywhere to place the kids. Because everybody has, you know, brought down and restricted the ability to be placed in a residential. And again, I'm not for placing kids in residential just because they need a bed. I don't think that should happen.
Yeah.
But I don't think that there was enough planning and strategy behind the legislation when it was released. And I think it makes it hard for those who are in the child welfare field to fulfill their positions and do the job, right? And then that's just even more emotions and more energies that's being drained, because you have no options. Your resources have been reduced, but then you have the responsibilities increase.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so yeah, we could go all day. But tell us a little bit as we're gonna wrap up. Can we see more books from you? What does the future hold for you? You know, what are the things? And then lastly, tell us, what are some things that you want to change in child welfare? What is it that you, because you're in child welfare, so it's clear that you want to have some type of impact. And so maybe share with us what you want that impact to be, and what would you want to see change in child welfare?
So what I definitely want to see change in child welfare is having more resources available to our families that we are serving. Because we expect them to do A, B, C, D in order to reunify with their children, but they are not able to do it because we are not offering the services. We don't have it for them. So that's more time they are stalling, you know?
Yep.
So that's definitely one thing I want to see change. Another thing that I want to see change is the placement issue. This is a big issue that something needs to be done. So those are the two main things that I want to see change in child welfare. There's so many other stuff, but the two main things are placement and services. Okay. And then for me, ongoing is I definitely want to work on more books, but I definitely, you know, you have to think about what you're going to put out there and see how it's going to impact the community. And the new workers, the ongoing social workers. So I definitely want to work on my book. I'm actually working on a planner right now.
Okay.
So I'm working on a child welfare planner. I think that's what it's going to call, but who knows?
Okay.
So this planner is going to be specific for the work that we do. It's going to have section on call reports when they do, and section on, you know, organizing your day and things like that. So I'm definitely working on that right now.
I love that. And that's going to be needed too. That's a great resource as well.
So I think that's what I have going on. And one of my goals right now is to have my book available at social work schools. To have it in their bookstore, to have it when they start the program. So that way, not only they have the textbook version and all that other good old stuff, they also have a hands-on guide from a social worker that have been in the field and is still in the field. So definitely I want this book available in all the social work schools, because I think it's a very important tool. And I've been hearing from the ones that bought it and read it, they said this is a very important tool and it needs to be available. So I'm going to reach out to schools and see how I can get my book into the bookstore or available with their community, the school social work community.
Well, girl, you speak it. I know it can happen for sure. And it is a great resource. Now, for people who are interested in purchasing a book, how about share how they can get the book, a copy, and then also if they want to follow you and what you do every day. I do know that you have made yourself the child welfare worker, and I know you show a lot of like your work and when you have days. So it's just an inspirational thing to watch. I follow you, so it's always good to kind of check in and say, oh, okay, yep, I remember those days where I had to do that. So it's kind of cool to have somebody to relate to. So maybe share how people can follow you and get in contact with you.
So on Instagram, I am the child welfare social worker on Instagram, and then my book is available to purchase on Amazon right now. The Kindle version and the print version is available on Amazon, and I am working on getting it into like the big name brand stores like Target, Walmart, Barnes and Nobles, but that's a different approval process it has to go through. So I'm currently working on that. I'm hoping soon it will be available in those stores. And then I give my Instagram. So yeah, if you need to reach out to me, just send me a DM. I'm always responding. I love to see how I can help out. And if there's anything that needs to be done, or if somebody wants to reach out to me to be a guest on their podcast, or to speak in their schools, they can also send me an email, and the email address is my last name, which is contehmmc@outlook.com. So let me say that again. It's contehmmc@outlook.com. So that's my email address.
I love it. Well, Makala, I thank you so much for coming in and joining us on the Child Welfare Leaders podcast. You have shared a ton. Again, I can't wait for anybody listening. Make sure you go get you a copy of this, gift it to a friend who's interested. I think this also opens up a gateway to encourage people to go get that social work degree. So I'm all about, you know, advancing the field here. So I love it. And, you know, I thank you for taking leadership just right where you are. You saw a need. That's leadership. That's what this is about. You went against the status quo. And though you're working in child welfare, you said, hey, I'm going to take everything that I've learned. I'm going to put it in a book to be a resource for other people. So you already out here and you are a child welfare leader leading the way right where you are. And we appreciate you. And thank you for all the work, your dedication, your passion that you give to the field. I know we don't get thanks enough, but I thank you and I honor you for what you're doing. It's been a privilege to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, Serge. And thank you for having me on your platform. I also love listening to your podcast. It really helps me going in the work that we do, because, you know, sometimes you want to give up. You want to throw that towel.
That's right.
But, you know, you also your podcast is very encouraging, and I absolutely love it. And thank you for having me on your podcast. I appreciate it.
All right. We're out.
All right. Bye.
The book that I wrote is entitled How to Survive as a Child Welfare Social Worker. This book was written as a guide and knowledge to discuss the hidden work of child welfare and to have an actual hands-on approach from an experienced child welfare social worker who shares the pros and cons of the work and how to navigate the different stages of this rewarding career. If you have a passion for helping children, youth, and families to thrive in the community, being a child welfare social worker may be the ideal career choice for you.
If you are a foster care worker, adoption worker, investigations worker, or interested in becoming a worker in the child welfare field, or perhaps you're just curious about what child welfare workers do, I want to recommend that you check out this resource. It offers great insights. The book is available on Amazon, so just search How to Survive as a Child Welfare Worker and then add it to your cart.
It's that easy. I got my copy. It's an easy read and a great guide. Let's support our own, Michaela Cote. She is on Instagram, where you can follow her at Child Welfare Social Worker. It's all one word, @ Child Welfare Social Worker, where she is bringing positivity to the child welfare field by sharing her journey. There you will see highlights of the work and how she balances work, life, and her self-care routine. Did I mention that she's a wife and has children? She is doing it. Check her out and support all that she's doing in the field. Keep leading the way, Michaela. You are a child welfare leader and you are appreciated. Thank you for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to have you as a listener. There's a lot of work to be done in the child welfare field. As leaders, we don't have to follow the status quo. It's just not good enough for the children we serve. They deserve better. That's why it is so important to have you in this field. Leading is not based on title, and it's not always the position that you hold. Leadership is action. If we take action, even doing something like writing a book to help others in the field, like Michaela did, it makes a difference because we are spreading knowledge to others in a way it might not get to them otherwise. Everything to equip you isn't taught in school, so we can produce resources that help one another. We can affect change through knowledge sharing. I want to encourage you, don't give up being an advocate for children. Be fierce, be bold, and be you, leading right where you are. Until next time.